Morning. Time to get cranked up this morning. We got to wake up a dreary looking, cold, wet, rainy morning. Stand up, do a few calisthenics, I guess. Get everybody woke up. We do Genesis 37 and 39 this morning. We'll back up and run through the lesson from Wednesday night by quick slides. There's several of them. We'll go through them in kind of a hurry to get warm back up with that. Remember the lay of the land where we are? It was Jacob's been up here in Padan Aram, coming back down through here. Go across the Jabbok, we cross the Jordan, go over into lay of Canaan at Shechem. We'll pick him up there later on down here to Bethel with that. So that's kind of where we are this morning on the map. So he ready to come back in. He comes back, goes to Shechem, buys land there, builds an altar to God, and that's Shechem, not only the name of a city, it's also the name of Hamor's son, being the prince or the ruler of that area. Think about it. There's a lot of these little city-states all over Palestine. They're not a big organized country like we'll be when the Jewish nation gets in there, the Israelites gets in there and organize it. Right now, they're all separate people, different tribes and things in there. So Shechem is the son of Hamor, who's the head of this city here. Dinah goes out, she's maybe mid-teens now, goes out to visit around and see what's in the territory out there. And not only is she seeing, but she's being seen. She's seen by Shechem, and he takes her and rapes her, or different words are used in different translations, but he defiles her. But he also then wants her to be his wife. So while this process is going on, her brothers are away, tending the sheep. So Jacob doesn't want to start anything on his own from there. So he waits till they come back. They're really upset about it. Such things should not be done. But then Hamor comes to talk to Jacob about getting marriage arrangement done there and offers whatever dowry and gifts they might want. So the brothers devise this scheme to get revenge, whereby they say, we will intermarry with you if you're willing to be circumcised like we are. So they go back to their people, to the men of the city, men and meeting in the gate of the city, and they try to sell this idea to them. And they agree to it. They say, if we marry with them, their daughters will be our wives for our sons, our daughters will be wives for their sons, and we'll share the flocks, and we'll get gain out of it. So the men agree to it. So then on the third day, when they had been circumcised and were very sore, two of the sons come in, Simeon and Levi, and attack them. They kill the men. They kill Hamor and Shechem and take Dinah back out and plunder the city, take the women and children captive and their flocks, etc. Jacob's upset because it's going to cause trouble for them, he sees, of whatever kind. So they move on down then. God's going to tell them to move down from Shechem down to Bethel. Pick him up next there. So God says, move. So Jacob, it's not just any move, it's a special move going back to the place where you remember Jacob had met God on the stairway to heaven with the angels on it there when he's going to Padan Aram 20 years ago. And Jacob tells his household to put away your foreign gods, purify yourself, change your clothes, but take a bath. We're going to the place where God is to worship. They go there, they built an altar there, and worship God there, and the promises are given to him again. Deborah's nurse dies, so we mentioned that. So, God speaks to him, that I am God Almighty. Reference that from Steve's lesson last Sunday night. And the promises again given to him, his name again is repeated, we changed from Jacob to Israel. But then they start going to move now from Bethel there, start down this way, and here's Jerusalem. And this area over here, Ephrath, is where Rachel would die during childbirth. She's in labor, has a son named Benjamin, and she dies during that, and they are buried here there on the way to Ephrath. Little piece tacked in here that Reuben went in and lay with one of his father's wives, Bilhah. Jacob knew about that. And then here's the list of the sons, and one daughter Dinah that we know of at this point. Isaac then dies, 180 years old, buried by Jacob and Esau. Look at that as I go through here. And Esau, we got one little chapter here, gives all of his people that come from him. And a couple of points from that is he takes his possessions and moves down south because there's not enough room there for all of his flocks and all of Jacob's flocks and those people that are already in the land. He goes down, way down south, below the Dead Sea area. So it's down here. And some of this will run into him again later down there, or the people of Edom, they come back into the land. One more story here then, chapter 38. That is, Judah married this Adullamite woman, had three sons, Ornan, and Shelah. And gets a wife, Tamar, but he was wicked, God killed him, so Onan was to go in and marry her, raise up seed for his dead brother, but he refused to fulfill his responsibilities, so God killed him also. Shelah was too young to marry, so Judah told her to go back, Tamar to go back and wait for Shelah to grow up. Then his wife dies, Judah's wife dies. He goes on a trip out to see his sheep herders, and Tamar hears about it, and she goes up where he's going to be coming by, dresses herself like a harlot. And he comes along, and he goes into her, promised a young goat as payment, and didn't have it with him before, so he offered his ring and his staff for pledge there. And after the incident, she goes back to her house. He sends the goat then to her, but they can't find her because she's not there. And shortly later, determined that she is pregnant, to play the harlot, and Judah says, let her bring her out and be burned. When she does come out, she says, this is the man by whom I am pregnant. It has to be Judah. And so he says she was more righteous than I. He had failed to fulfill his part in giving her his son Tamar. Twin sons were born to her as a result of that incident with Judah. He rests in Zerah, and we talked about the genealogies in Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Judah and Perez, the lineage of Christ, from that incident between Judah and Tamar. So I think that kind of catches us up to where we were. Now, before we take off to the next thing, let's make a little distinction here. We've been studying about Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the three patriarchs. And we've seen the promises made to them over and over and over and over about having the land, being a great nation, and then through them, their seed, all the nations be blessed. Promises made to Abraham, repeated to Abraham, made to Jacob, and to Jacob more than once. So these are the patriarchs, these three. Now we're going to jump everything from here, the rest of the book, 37 to 39 through 50, with Bob Joseph. Now Jacob will still be there, but the storyline's going to turn to Joseph and play in on him. Not one of the patriarchs, not mentioned as a patriarch, but very much the next leading character in the book of Genesis here. And he's what gets the children of Israel into Egypt, where they get into the Egyptian bondage then, and leads into the next part of the Exodus coming out. So, we'll turn our attention now to Joseph, chapter 37 first, and then we'll go into chapter 39 today. All right, 37. Joseph's about 17 years old when all this starts out here. And he's out with his brothers, the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah, tending to the sheep, and makes a bad report about them back to his father. Now, Jacob is the favorite son. Joseph is the favorite son of Jacob, excuse me. Joseph is the favorite son of Jacob's old age. Now, think about Benjamin will be even older in his age, but Joseph's the one that is pulled out as his favorite here, made this coat of many colors, a special tunic that he wore. That would have been something to make him really stand out as denoted as the favorite son of his father. Now he's got a house full of sons, and really the birthright of the oldest should go to the first, to the oldest. But Joseph is the one that's picked out and gets all the attention, the favoritism here from Jacob. So, as you might imagine, this causes big jealousy problems between the other brothers, and Joseph is the one that gets picked out. Believe that. Now, to add to that, not the fact he's already the favorite son, and gets the special attention of Jacob because of that, to add to that, Joseph has these dreams. So he has this first dream about these sheaves, the sheaves of grain that are piled up here, and the 11 sheaves are bowed down to his in the middle. And he tells his brothers this story. And they come up with logical questions. You mean from this dream that you're going to have dominion over us and we're going to all bow down to you? And that troubles them, of course, and makes them even more jealous. So it turned into hatred now. They literally hate their brother Joseph because of this. Then he has another dream. And this time it's the sun, moon, and 11 stars that are bowed down to him. So you go beyond just the 11 that he had the first time. Now he brings in the sun and moon. So who are they going to represent? Father and his mother. What's the problem with that? What's the problem with that? You think it ain't going to happen, right? But where's mother? She's already died. Okay? So she's died already. So don't know that. I mean, read the commentaries. There's all kinds of explanations about this. Speculations, I guess, they're a better word for it. Did the dreams occur earlier before his mother had died and now he's just revealing them now? Don't know that. That's one possibility. Or it could be just a generic statement in any one of the mothers. There were other wives that Jacob had. Maybe to make the family look like a complete family. That would be that. Or is it just a generic thing of a family is going to bow down. This family is going to bow down. So whichever. But the note here is that if it's happening chronologically, then obviously Rachel has already died at this point. But now it's not just the brothers that get on to him because of the jealousy and hatred they had. Now Jacob speaks up because who's he involved in the dream now? Him. Okay? You mean, like, I'm going to bow down to you? So he rebukes him about it, even his brothers, of course, hated even more and more. So yeah. Yeah. It'll be out of sequence as far as the chronology of it is, but that's entirely possible. Sometime one story's kind of cleaned up, but they start the other. We talked about that. So don't know exactly how to fit the mother in there. There's some several possibilities about it. Just notice we go by about that. So the brothers are now at Shechem, shearing the sheep, taking care of the sheep, and tending the flocks. And so Jacob's going to send Joseph out to check on them. Now, we'll talk about this more in a minute, but even though he's a favorite son, he still goes out and does what his father wants to do. So they're down here now in Hebron, way down in the south, kind of in the middle of the Dead Sea area down here, up across that. Here's Hebron here. And they're going up to Shechem, which is right between Mount Ebal and Mount Gerizim, in the middle of the country. That's where they are supposed to be there tending their sheep. Now, he's going to find them there. He's going to find them way up in Dothan, which is even further up near the Jezreel Valley coming across there. So he's got quite a little trek to go up and find his brothers. So he sends them to Shechem to check on his brothers. They're tending the flock. And as he goes to Shechem, he doesn't find them. And the man there, Hill, finds him wandering in the field and says, they said they were going on to Dothan. So he goes to Dothan and finds them there. But they see him coming then. And when they see him coming, they look up and say, here comes this dreamer. And they start putting together this plan to kill him. But Reuben speaks up and says, let's don't kill him. Here's a pit. One translation is a cistern. Catch water. It was dry. It points out in the text it was dry. Enough water in there. So he said, let's just put him in his pit, put him in his cistern. And what did Reuben want to do? What was his plan? Come back later and get him out, take him back to his father. Okay, you got to keep that in mind. That was a noble thing on his part to save Joseph's life here. But the brothers put him in there, and then Reuben's out of the picture a little bit. I don't know if he's left or what, but he's not around for the next little scene, as you see, he's going to death then. So they're eating, and this band of Israelite traders come by, They're actually coming from Gilead. If you think about your map being up here, down here, Gilead being up here on the east side of the Jordan up in this area up here. They're coming down. They're headed to Egypt down here. So it'd be logical they'd come right through the territory where they are here. So Israelite traders coming from Midian came by, and Judah says, you know, we don't really want to kill our own brother. They go back and report that to our father. They almost do anyhow. But he sees this selling for money. We'll get something out of it, not just killing him. They decide to sell him then to these traders that are coming through here for 20 shekels of silver. Even though he's their brother, they will get the money out of it there. So they take him and go to Egypt with him, where they sell him there. That's kind of the run of chapter 37. Now, that's only one big point here. How does timing work out? Think about the timing of Joseph going to Shechem to find him. They weren't there. They were in Dothan. They weren't up there. And then these traders are coming down from the area of Gilead going down toward Egypt. What's behind all this? God is, okay? There's providence going on here. All this timing going on because think ahead now. What's Joseph going to tell him later on about him being in Egypt? God did it. Sent here for a purpose. Laid out. So even now the hand of God is involved in getting all this to happen, timing wise. Go through here. Reuben then comes back and finds he was gone out of the pit. We're going to go back and pick him out and take him back to his father. He's very upset. So they take this coat, his favorite coat that they stripped off of him, and let me back up and make a comment. Think about Joseph here. We're going to get Joseph. He's got so much trouble he's going to go through here. They get him and they take him, pull his coat off of him, and dump him in his pit. Now, put yourself in his place. He said, no idea how he's going to get out, if he's going to get out, when he's going to get out. He's been stripped of his outer garments. I don't know if it's hot, if it's cold. If it's cold at night. I don't know how he stayed in there. But Joseph is going to go through a multitude of difficult things here, starting here at the hand of his own brother. So they dip his coat in the blood of a goat and take it back to your father, and they so innocently like say, we found this coat. Is it your son's coat? Not, it's like Joseph, our brother's coat. You know, is this your son's coat? And obviously Jacob said it was, and he mourned many, many days and would not be comforted over the death of his favorite son. So Joseph was taken to Egypt, sold to Potiphar, who was the captain of Pharaoh's guard. So, before we get into 39, let's just run through three or four comments about this chapter. If you have some, be glad to hear them. Favoritism. Coat of many colors that he was given. The favoritism that Jacob is showing to his son here. Back up one generation. What have you got? Favoritism between Jacob and Esau by Isaac and Rebecca. Okay. Same type situation back, generation back. But it was very much so. One took one and one took the other. Generation to generation. Jealousy, big time jealousy, with Jacob's coat of many colors, of favoritism, it was being shown to him by his father. A few passages here about jealousy. Wrath is cruel, but who's able to stand for jealousy? It's eating at you there. Comment here, commentator says, anger is temporary. You can get over anger, but envy or jealousy is like poison the serpent. Just get there and keep biting at you, biting at you, biting at you. You don't control it. Wrath is cruel, anger is outrageous. But look at the last line. He that grieves at the good of another will still be contriving to hurt him, will keep his anger forever. And you've got this jealousy, this envy going on. He just sits there and keeps looking for ways to get back. Get here. And we got hatred here. This is set out in plain text there that the brothers hated him. So course, Galatians 5:19, well, the works of the flesh here, listed out here. Lewdness, idolatry, sorcery is hatred. Hatred is wrong. It's sin. Very opposite of one of the fruit of the Spirit, which is brotherly love, kindness, those kind of things. And your hatred, totally the opposite side of that. So a lesson for us here. Watch out for those kind of things. Deceit. Passage here from Job. We won't take time to go read it, look at it, but Job 11. But in other things in Job, here's one. My lips will not speak wickedness, or my tongue's deceit. We've seen deceit and the other generations back also. It's not a new sin from the book of Genesis. Deceit there. Psalms chapter 5. You shall destroy those who speak falsehood. The Lord abhors the bloodthirsty and the deceitful man. Deceit put in here with the blood, so much bloodthirsty, but it kills someone. Like a madman who throws firebrands, arrows, and death, the man who deceives his neighbor and says, I was only joking. And then from Mark, where these things come from within, out of the heart, men proceed evil thoughts, adulteries, fornication, murders, thefts, covetousness, wickedness, and deceit comes from within our hearts. These will follow, man. And then there's some lessons here on peer pressure as well. I mentioned again, I thought this was a high school class, these notes before. Exodus 23, don't follow a crowd to do evil. You know, 1 Corinthians 15:33 about evil companions or evil communication or evil company. The companionship it's referring to here is being evil. It will cause trouble. And then think about this one from Matthew 7, and by entering into the wide gate or the narrow gate, where's most people going? Wide gate, because lots of people are going in that direction there. So the pressure for most people are going is that in there. So that's the end of chapter 37. Somebody got something. Jeff got something. Sure. So. And that's not just a favoritism, Jeff. It's anything that we do that presents a pattern for our children. Oh no. Which is the whole deceit session up here, right? Yeah. Lying's wrong. But deceit, we looked at verses here, deceit is this is wrong. So if I let you come to a conclusion that's wrong by the way I set the circumstance up around you, and I don't correct it then lying too. Yeah, because, right. Yeah, because he thought when they come into Egypt later on, he's dead. Right. Oh yeah, he mourned many days. Yeah, we know that. Yeah, yes sir. Albert's point. In this case, as Joseph pointed out, is an intentional deceit. They knew better. Albert's point sometimes is that we're led to make decisions. We do make decisions. We draw decisions from things that people tell us that they're not necessarily intending to deceive us, but they'll give us all the truth. They don't know all the truth. Therefore, we make a wrong conclusion. We have to be careful on that side too. We've seen examples of that too in the Bible. All right, let's get on and get Joseph in Egypt. Run through chapter 39. Look at the narrative there, right quick. This is the big, big, big point here. The Lord was with Joseph all through this whole process. God's behind this. Now, Joseph's going to suffer and suffer a lot because of it, but it's still His will to get into the place where He wants him to be here. Joseph's going to be successful. Yeah, he's going to have some downs. He's going to be successful because of the fact the Lord's with him. And he believed and he trusted the Lord. Now, the success that Joseph had, even where he was put, was noted by Potiphar. Remember, Potiphar bought him. He's a slave of Potiphar's here. But Potiphar notices this. You got to keep in mind now, as we get to the next part here, that Joseph is a young man, 17 when he was sold. It says he was a handsome man. Like one verse says, he was well built. He was a talk about a man, if you will, here, young 17-year-old, and he's in his master's house, going about the activities there. Now, God blesses not only Joseph, he blesses Potiphar and everything he has, in his house and his fields, all because of Joseph's presence there. So Joseph's put in charge of all the house. He has complete control. It's going to be very similar here to what he has when he gets in Pharaoh's house. He's in charge of everything in the house. And he's going to tell Potiphar's wife, who he's cast his longing eyes for him and wants him to lie with her. Your master gave me everything in the house except you. Everything in the house. He doesn't concern himself with anything except what goes in his mouth. Everything else I take care of. So. But Joseph refuses her. Not just once, but over and over he refuses her. And his whole point is, how can I do this great thing and sin against God? Now, is it wrong to do this as far as Potiphar is concerned? Yeah, he's already made that point. He's your wife. I have no right to her. Okay, she's yours. So I have no right to do that. But the sin Joseph points out when he says this, that I will sin against God if I do this. So, think about this. Where is Joseph? Long ways from home. Anybody know him? Nobody knows him. So, what if he had everybody had done this? Anybody gonna know about it? Anybody gonna run and tell mom and daddy? Anybody? Not married? No wife to worry about? Think about, he could have pushed this off with, okay, I can advance with this. I get good with her. I get even more benefits. No, he says it's wrong. He didn't do it. But she keeps it up. Day after day after day, it says. He was even careful when the text points out where he was in the house. He had to be there alone with her in the house. But they were one day. The men were out. He was about in the house, about doing his normal duties, doing his work. And she grabs hold of him. And he turns and flees and leaves his coat. So she holds his coat. And he pulls out of it and runs outside to get away from her. And now she's had enough. She's tried and she's tried and she's tried. She's been rejected enough times that she said, okay, I'm going to get him. So she tells the servants first, and then she comes, when Potiphar comes in and tells him that this Hebrew slave that you brought into this house has come in here and tried to force himself upon me. And he left his coat here when he got up and ran. So Potiphar then puts Joseph in prison. And again, the Lord's with him. The Lord's got to get him in the right place for the right thing. And yeah, prison's not a good place to be. And a sister's not a good place to be. In a pit. But he goes through this to get there. But in prison, guess what? He's a shining star again because of the way he acts, the attitude he displays, and the prisoner put the chief of the prisoners, the guards, puts him in charge of the prison. And the Lord continues to bless him there. So that's kind of the synopsis of what's in chapter 39. If you go through the narrative there, he sold Potiphar, the seduction, the work, the blessing, and he winds up then in prison because of Potiphar's wife. So, three or four thoughts out of this chapter, roughly. And then first came responsibility. Joseph went into the house to do his work. Now, none of the men were in the house. It turned out to be a bad situation. But Joseph had work to do. And he went in there to do his work. And what I'm getting to is his work. And again, this goes back to the high school class I was teaching on this thing. You've got to learn to work. You've got the work to do. You've got to do your work. And passage in 1 Thessalonians 4 here says, we're to work with our own hands. And this one here talks about you don't work, you don't eat. So teach your children, teach your grandchildren the responsibility of learning how to work. Then we get this section on lust and seduction and things that went on between Joseph and Potiphar's wife. Proverbs 7 here. And it's a woman with the attire of a harlot, crafty heart, lurking at every corner. Come and delight yourself in love. Enticing speech, he comes at him. You can imagine what Potiphar's wife, we don't have it recorded what all she said to him. But she could make him all kind of promises or sweet talks or whatever, trying to get Joseph to be with her. But the passage here is a young man, Proverbs, talking to. He did not know if he went into her it would cost him his life. Joseph knew that. Joseph didn't bite. He didn't take this thing here. Then we got lying coming here again. We've seen lying over and over and over and over through the book of Genesis. And the condemnation here, they're all liars. They're part of the lake, burnt the fire and brimstone. Stand for the truth. Even when it hurts. Even when it hurts. And we've seen that before too. And as we go through this. And Joseph here is going to get hurt because of the lie that was told here. Big thing is, Joseph wouldn't do that in a sin against God, or lying, or any of those things we looked at, is sin against God. We go across the course of Ananias and Sapphira and look at that, and the story in Acts 5 there. Get more than that. Here's the last slide. We've got about 5 minutes left. Consider God's blessing on Joseph. Faithful in the most difficult of circumstances. Look how his brothers had treated him. Hated him. Envy. Jealousy. Were willing to kill him. And put blood on his coat and take it back to his father. Fortunately, providentially, the Midianites came by and he sold him instead. Were they ready to kill him? Sold him to Egypt. Away from home. 17-year-old. Had no idea he'd ever get back home. But here he is in Potiphar's house. Grand opportunity to move up. Take it with the boss's wife. Didn't do it. Here's the big thing. His faithfulness was rewarded by God's blessings. Everywhere he went, the Lord was with him, made him prosper. He's got part of it today. The same thing's going to continue as he goes on and gets disappointed again. He's still got another two years of sitting there in prison. But again, the timing's got to be right. Everything falls in place here. Okay. Anybody else got some thoughts about 37 or 39 is the one in the story of Joseph. Now, in case you didn't hear what I was saying, it was obvious that people around Abraham or Joseph or these other characters we studied back here, we're seeing times already in our study in the book here that people noticed and had some comment about the fact that God was blessing Abraham. They could see it. People here could see God was blessing Joseph. So our application to us is we need to live such a way that God, that people around us will see that we're different. That God blesses us. That we know who He is. And we don't do it any of it just to get His blessings. But the verse he quoted here from Matthew 5, that your light so shine that who gets the glory from that? God does. Okay. We live our lives, we get the blessings. We live our lives in a way that God's glorified. All right. Anything else? About 2 minutes. All right. See, we got 40 and 41, 42 out there for Wednesday night. The next 2 or 3 chapters there. 40, 41. I think this may be 2 chapters. If you look and see. Be reading your stuff. Please read this stuff. Just read this text a couple times between now and then. We don't get all the details of the narrative, but you pick those up, get the highlights, and try to get some lessons from it we talked about. Okay? Thanks. 40 through 42, we've got 3 chapters. Okay.